Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Andrew P. Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week?
Doing good, Jim. How are you, sir?
I'm very good. I'm ready to talk some Penn State football. But before we do, the reminder that our show is brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Have a great inventory of new vehicles, including the 2024 Honda Civic with interest rates as low as 3.9%. They also have an amazing selection of pre-owned vehicles available for immediate delivery. Bobby Ray Hall Honda, that's where I got my new car, Andy. I got my Honda CR-V. I love it. It's fantastic. If you want to check them out, visit their West College Avenue showroom or online. You can go to BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. I had a great buying experience there, and that was before I became a spokesman for them. Fantastic. I don't live in State College, Andy. I live 90 miles away. I could have gotten my Honda anywhere, but that's where I chose to go because best price, best sales experience. Fantastic, Andy.
I have a Honda story for you, Jimmy, I could talk about. First of all, I bought my car at Bobby Ray Hall Honda. Our CR-V we bought from Bobby Ray Hall Honda. But I have two short, quick Honda stories. We've owned two Hondas. I'm nearing six decades of life. I've owned two Hondas. The first one got to 471,000 miles.
Okay.
Right now, our 10-year-old Honda CR-V has 192,000 miles on it. I'm just saying I am a big fan of the Honda automobile.
That's a good call there. It's a good reason to buy a Honda, like I said. And the experience there at Bobby Ray Hall was fantastic. Couldn't be beat. All right. Let's move on. Let's get to our Penn State football topics, Andy. Let's start with this. Now, Pro Football Focus, it's a great resource, and they don't just handle pro football. They also do college football.
They do.
And some of their things, like they do evaluations after every game, rate every player on the field. It's really some great information. But they put out some things, and you and I were talking about this. They put out their top 10 quarterback rooms in the country. I don't know if you saw this also, Andy. I just noticed this. They also put out their top 10 returning quarterbacks, which was a little bit different list, but a lot of similarities to it. But where they had, as far as Penn State, they had Penn State, the quarterback room ranked ninth in the country. How does that strike you? Is that where they belong?
So I also believe they said, Jimmy, that they might call Drew Aller the most undervalued or underappreciated quarterback possibly in the country. They didn't say absolutely, but they would put him partially in that category. And at first glance, I'm like, well, did you watch the Ohio State and Michigan games, right? Like, that's where everybody goes. And then, of course, thinking about it, and I'm like, you know what? I think they're right. Okay, that's just what I want to say. There's just something about this duo with Aller as the clear number one and Bo Pribula playing an instrumental role as the number two quarterback that, to me, as a duo, has so much upside and appeal. And it's still about Drew Aller, right? Like, it's always about Drew Aller. And I really haven't thought much about his first season as the quarterback. And so I spent this week spending some time watching some games, watching some film from last year, and just getting a better look at watching Drew Aller from not game by single game, but over the course of the season. And here's what I want to say. And this is why PFF is right, that they had him at number 9, but it's inside the top 10. So Drew Aller was a first-year starter with tools. And as I watched him play, it became clear that he was battling a case of trying to please his offensive coordinator or his coach type season. Like, he was trying to do what they were telling him to do. And just like, he was trying to put his square peg into Reno. The only free game I thought I saw him play pretty much all year where it looked natural, fluid, and free was West Virginia. After that, Jimmy, it was like a tractor pull for that kid to play quarterback. At the end of the day, this is what staggers me. Almost 60% completion percentage. Can it be better? Yes. 2,630 yards, not terrible. 25 touchdowns, two interceptions. And the interception thing got blown up, right? I think Andy Kotelnicki's job, see, I can't even say my own first name, Jimmy. Look at me. Andy's job is to free him up and let his talents shine. I'm just asking you, didn't he look like he was bottled up pretty much last year for the most part, Jimmy? Like, he was fighting something. It was almost like, to me, like he was thinking instead of playing. He looked very mechanical instead of free. And yet he still produced those kind of numbers. And I am going to get to the Ohio State and the Michigan game because they matter, right? 18 for 42 and 191 yards against Ohio State with a touchdown. 10 for 23, 70 yards, and a touchdown against the defending national champion Michigan Wolverines. And everyone should be talking about that he has to be better in big games. And while on the surface, I kind of agree with that, I think him being better against better competition in 2024 will come more out of what it looks like in the other games than just all about those games, right? Does he have the freedom? Is he playing free and open? Is he letting his talent shine? Those other games will tell the story in terms of him leading up to the marquee matchups, of whether those will just be another game or whether they will have to be the marquee game. So, and last year, I think those two games were targets and everything else was such a tractor pull. It was just simply brought to a bigger and more bright light in those big matchups. So I still think the numbers he produced are staggering a little bit based on what you were seeing from my eye test when I went back and watched. I just think there's so much more there to be had that if Andy can tap it and find it, that he is one part of the equation, in my opinion, and there is a second part.
There is more than just him, and the way I put it, Andy, and this is agreeing with you, but I think he was inside his own head, and if you remember before the season even started, James Franklin came out and said, oh, I think it's been 3 weeks in practice where he has not thrown one interception.
Correct.
So was he overly cautious? Was he overly careful? And it created the great touchdown interception ratio. But did he pass up on other opportunities? The other part to this equation, Andy, is there were so many plays where the pass went one way, the receiver went the other.
Some of that.
And we as fans just said, what in the world is going on here?
Correct.
And, you know, if you take a look at a few of the plays, it's pretty obvious it was on the receiver. The receiver went the wrong way. And, you know, one of the obvious plays, and I wish I could remember which game it was. I can't. But it was I'm not sure exactly what they call it, an option route, essentially where a receiver, he goes either inside or outside, depending on how the defender is playing him. If the defender is inside him, he goes out. If the defender is playing outside coverage, you cut in. And it was a very blatant, obvious, the defender was playing inside the receiver. He should have cut out. That's where the pass went. The receiver went the other way. Now, that's one instance, and I'm cherry picking.
You are cherry picking.
I am cherry picking by picking out the one play. because it was blatant. It was obvious. I watched it in the replay, watched it over and over again to confirm what I thought. If you watch the game on TV, the announcers just said, oh, they're not on the same page. You know, one of my favorite comments from the football announcer, they're not on the same page. Well, if they're not on the same page, probably somebody was right and somebody was wrong. In the instance where I really looked into it, the quarterback was correct. The receiver was wrong, Andy. And I wonder how often that was the case during the season. And what it does, not just that specific play, but how often did this happen and Drew Aller start to not trust his receivers? And that's such a part of the equation. How much, I'm not sure what that percentage is, but no doubt it is part of it, Andy.
Yeah, I'll stand on my he was trying to please his offensive coordinator and coach mantra. And I'll also say the manifestation of what you saw in Michigan and Ohio State was a quarterback who, A, didn't believe in what he was doing, and B, was petrified to fail. And then when he did fail, it only got worse. Andy's job this year is to make Drew Aller not care one lick or iota about failing. Go out there and keep slinging it and doing it. And he's got support, right? That's the second part of this equation, Jimmy. It's Bo, right? Bo is such an asset to the quarterback room in this team. Like 350 rushing yards, 6 touchdowns. Okay, so he only had 149 passing yards. That's not what he's put on the field for, but he also had 4 touchdowns. That's 10 total touchdowns, JG, from your backup quarterback. That number struck me. I'm like, dude, that guy had a hand in 10 touchdowns. But here's what he does. He's a lightning rod, right? He is a pure lightning rod when he enters the game. He's full of confidence in what he knows he can do and what he is asked to do. And he has this element of command and control about him. It's sort of like a little bit like he's a bull in a china shop. Like, you know why I'm out here. I know why I'm out here. And you know what I'm going to do. And I know what I'm going to do. So stop me, right? That's exactly the way he plays the game when he steps on the field. And I just think if you put that two together and you use that as an asset, part B to Andy Kotelnicki's responsibility to this offense, use that as an asset week in and week out, not 40 snaps a game, but use it.
Definitely got to get him as part of the offense. But also, what a last note I want to point out, Andy, you talked about this, I've never seen one quarterback get so many articles that he's underrated and so many articles that he's overrated.
Right.
We get those both about Drew Aller. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number one. We got lots more to go. Stick around.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. Andy, in quarter one, we took a look at the quarterback position. It was kind of interesting. I eat this stuff up when different groups, they put out their rankings, whether it's positional, projecting where a team's going to finish on the season. And there's a lot of these that they're doing a positional thing, and they do the room, the running back room, the quarterback room. And it was interesting, Pro Football Focus, you know, we were talking about where they did the quarterback room, and in the quarterback room, Penn State ended up number 9 on their listing. Just a real quick run through on it. It was Georgia, Oregon, Texas, Ohio State, Alabama, Ole Miss, Florida, Notre Dame, Penn State, and Missouri. I think this is a round up your usual suspects, but the one note I want to make is there was another list that had the top 10 returning quarterbacks, and Drew Aller was number 8. A lot of the same folks, were in there the Georgia quarterback, Oregon, Alabama, you know, Texas. But the one interesting one to note is in the best quarterback room, they had Ohio State number four. But right. In this individual quarterback one, they did not have Ohio State in there.
Because who's it going to be?
Yeah, it's who's it going to be? They've got five guys in the mix who are all right. highly regarded. So it'll be interesting to see how that one shakes out. Keep an eye on that if you want something to look at. That's probably the one question mark there is with the Ohio State team. All right, Andy, quarter number two, time for a new topic. We're going to call this three questions. This is where I get to ask the questions. So it's a personal gym Ask Andy segment. And let's start with this, Andy. What do you consider the most important position on the Penn State offense going into the 24 season?
Yeah, everyone's going to say wide receiver, and I am not, right? It's the offensive line. It's the offensive line by a mile, because I think this offensive line really needs for Penn State's offense to reach the next level. We're always talking about the next level. They need to become a depth-filled beast in 2024. And I feel strongly that they have the ingredients. They're not experienced, Jimmy, per se, but they are a little bit seasoned, right? The only experience, true, what I would classify as experience, more than, say, you know, four or five, a handful of starts, that's Sal Wormley, who most Penn State followers seems to forget plays offensive line for him, because all he does is show up every week and just do his job. And there's something beautiful about that guy, but I see enough experience and I see enough emerging depth and enough talent development that I really strongly believe that they are the turnkey for this offense. As a group, what position you're asking? Like, so you're talking about the position group. If the offensive line can, you know, begin, and they have so many options, so many, including your favorite, the center, you know, Cooper Cousins. You're like, oh, I love Cooper Cousins. And I get it. I understand it. I still think Nick Dawkins is the best guy to play center for them in 2024, but I understand what you're saying. They have so much, like, what I would call, you know, reliable depth that you can see has developed at a certain level, that if they can pull pieces together, I mean, J.B. Nelson might not start for this offense, on the offensive line for Penn State. How is that for a swing depth guy? He might not start, Jimmy. He might not. You know, he might not win that, you know, that battle at left guard. But I just think if this group can become the depth-filled beast that it looks like it can be, they are the turnkey to make Penn State's offense go even better in 2024. They will help that quarterback out immensely.
Okay, a couple things, Andy, in response to your answer. First thing, I adamantly do not think I ever went, ooh, Cooper Cousins. I don't think my voice ever went that way. And more specifically, yes, I'm a Cooper Cousins fan.
Man crush.
But I've never said he should be the guy over Nick Dawkins.
You haven't.
Which it should be Nick Dawkins. I think what we had there is, this is what you want, a veteran ready to step in, take the position, and the understudy ready to take over if there's any issues. That's where I've always sat with that. I also do think, we've talked about this, the depth at the offensive line is the key. The question is, can they put the pieces together?
Correct.
Can they do that quickly?
It's a jigsaw puzzle.
It is. But, you know, the base is the interior, as you mentioned, Sal Wormley is back. I think between Vega Ioane, J.B. Nelson, the left guard position is in good hands. Yep. We talked a little bit about the center position. I think Nick Dawkins, Cooper Cousins backing him up, I feel pretty secure there. The big question mark is the tackles. And a big part of that question mark is they were just so good last year. And that's what you're replacing. You don't have a guy like Olu come along very often.
I agree.
And you got conditioned to that over the last 2 years. not going to be there this year. So it will be interesting to see how they put those pieces together. All right, Andy, that was question number one. Let's hit question number two. Let's go to the other side of the ball. With all that loss of talent to the NFL on the defensive side of the ball, we all know that.
All levels, yeah.
Each level.
Yep.
Where do you see the gaps to start the 24 season? Where is their potential issue?
Yeah, I see it at linebacker. That's where I think that's where I think Penn State overall defensively, and I still think this defense is going to be really good. Not last year good. Please don't think that. But I still think they have enormous potential to be a game-changing defense. I think linebacker is your sort of spinning your wheels and trying to play a little bit of catch-up, maybe sooner than later. I don't have, over the course of 12 games, I don't think the linebacker position will show itself as a problem, but I just think, you know, at the beginning, like, they're going to be changing and going to a two linebacker set, right, with the new DC. I get that, right? And that fits today's game. Am I a big fan of Tony Rojas? Yeah, absolutely. I'm not at your man crush level, JG, but I'm in the neighborhood, right? Like, I really like him. But he played limited snaps, and he flashed like crazy, right? He did. That's what he did. He would be put in there for a limited time, and he flashed like crazy. But I think being thrust in to play every single down or sort of full-time where you're, you know, after you do a flash on a short thing, can you do it on a longer leash? I don't think that's known. I need to see it on a longer leash because the longer leash is so much harder. So you need to see what that looks like. And I think it's going to take him a little bit of time. I just don't think Tony has enough seat time. I think he's got some flash time, but I don't think he has enough real seat time. Now, Kobe King, man, did that guy develop nicely in 2023. What a huge jump from 22 to 23 for that guy. In 22, you were kind of looking at it going, is this guy going to make it on the field? Right? Like, it just wasn't that good, Jimmy. Man, did he close that gap and make huge strides. So I feel comfortable that he's the man in the middle in this two linebacker sort of defense. He was second on the team in tackles last year, right? So, you know, you've got a good man, but you've got a like sort of unknown live wire. Now, Dom DeLuca, I think that's your third guy. He's your specialist, right? That's him in a nutshell. As a unit, I think they have the most ground to make up, in my opinion, overall. But I also think after maybe 4, 5, 6, 7 games, you will have seen that ground made up because there is enough pieces and potential there. But I just think, you know, a combination of changing and going to two linebackers and one of those key roles being a guy who has a high upside and has flashed in short windows but hasn't played the long haul of 60, 70 snaps a game. Need to see that on and be flashing, not at that same level, but maybe a step or two below it, play in and play out. And I think you're going to see that, but I think it's going to take some time.
A couple things. I think the one part of the equation that you left out, Andy, though, was with the switch to the 4-2, it's going to be a third safety on the field.
Correct.
Which means it's going to be an experienced player and a talented player. That's helpful. As you mentioned, the middle linebacker is now experienced and good and returning.
Correct.
Dom DeLuca is a tremendous insurance policy.
Specialist,
a lot of playing time, veteran, has a role to play, will be part of it.
Yep.
Where you are right, Tony Rojas is the X factor here. And I suspect, and it's kind of the same discussion that I think we'll have about Abdul Carter at some point, is they're going to flash, they're really going to make plays, but are they also going to make mistakes? Are there going to be some growing pains?
Right.
For Rojas, it's that full-time role at linebacker. For Abdul Carter, it's making that shift in positions. But there's no doubt in my mind that they will both flash. Okay, three questions. We got one more to go, Andy. Give me two players you think have the highest chance of overperforming in 2024.
Yeah, I'm going to give you one on each side of the ball. Offense, it's the quarterback, Drew Aller. You pointed out in quarter number one, the most underrated, most overrated. You get articles about both. I just think he's sitting on something big. I think Andy knows how to push his button. It just feels there's so many things. And after covering And being around football for 30 plus years, the way I look at it, I just see and feel so many of the right elements. And I see so much more potential in him if he can be gotten out of his own way and freed up. He, for me, is by far and away the offensive guy. And on defense, it is deny Dennis Sutton. He had a limited role last year, right behind two NFL draft picks. And all he did was register 26 tackles, 6 TFLs, 3.5 sacks, and 2 forced fumbles. In a truly limited role, Jimmy. That's a truly limited role. When I think of him, I think of the old Johnny Cash song, Folsom Prison song. I hear the train coming. It's rolling around the bend. That is tonight Dennis Sutton to me. He's coming, Big Ten, and he's rolling around the bend.
I think those are two very good answers. I think deny Dennis Sutton, there's just so much there, Andy. We know
he's,
it.
He's coming,
and
dude.
And he does have that advantage of Abdul Carter on the other side, who's got yes! the big name. There's got and rightfully so. And if you're an offense, you've got to respect the fact that on that side, here comes Abdul Carter. Oops. What about the other side? By the way, I thought that it was the combination of Adisa Isaac and Chop Robinson that made them both so good. You couldn't focus on one and not the other. All right, that's it for my questions. Next, we got your questions, and we ask Andy.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number 3, which means it's time to ask Andy. We're going to take your questions for Andy. If you want to send in a question, all you got to do, download the app, Keystone Sports. You'll see the Ask Andy button, and away you go. All right, Andrew P., you ready?
Let's go, sir.
Let's talk about, let's start with our buddy Brad from Perkasie, who says, since 2017, it feels like Penn State plays offense not to lose. Franklin talks about explosive plays, but then the offense hasn't created them in the passing game with deep shots, besides a few to Dotson when he was with us. Can Andy Kotelnicki change this? Will James Franklin allow him to be aggressive or just play the game to be close?
Okay, Jimmy, so what did Brad use to describe the offense? Can you give me the adjective he called it right there in the first sentence?
It feels like Penn State plays offense not to lose.
There you go. So I don't agree with that. I can't. I'm not one to beat up our listeners. And say, I'm like, they can't push the envelope down the field because they haven't had the personnel for it. He's 100%. Brad, you're 100% right on that one. And for the last couple seasons, it's felt like forced family fun, right? Like that's where somebody schedules a picnic and all your aunts and uncles are going to be there and you kind of want to go, but you don't really want to go because all your aunts and uncles and cousins are going to be there, but you have to go. So it's called forced family fun. So I think Penn State's deep passing game has sort of been forced family fun the last couple of years. So I do agree with you, and they need to stretch the field, but I still think they're pretty good at getting to the 30-point threshold, 32-point threshold. They're pretty consistent about that, except in the big games, and we're talking about Michigan and Ohio State. I don't think they have had the cover of a defense, so they have had a luxury. You know, he's not completely wrong, but Brad, overall, since 17, I mean, I don't know. I don't see it as that long of a stretch. I do think that, you know, the COVID year was tough. And, you know, right out of COVID year was also pretty rough, but got better. I think the last 2 years, the offense hasn't been playing to lose. I just don't think they were able to perform against next level competition. That's simply the way it is. They could not meet next level competition halfway across the room and make it a fair fight. They weren't even fair fight games, Jimmy. Even though 2 years ago, I know, what was it, at Ohio State, I think, Penn State, or was it at Michigan, where Penn State led in the third quarter? But everything told you it was a three-touchdown game in Michigan's favor. So I just don't think they've been able to meet higher competition halfway across the room. But I don't think it's been that they've played not to lose. I haven't seen that.
Well, Andy, I think that I do agree some with Brad. I disagree some with him, and I also disagree some with you. I think some of this – well, first of all, I think Brad saying is that will Franklin allow him to be aggressive? Yeah, James Franklin wants explosive plays. Yeah. It's not a question of allowing. In fact, the last offensive coordinator wasn't getting that part of the job done, and he's out of a job, okay? So it's not on James Franklin like he wants to play more conservative. I think the other part of this, and we talked about it when we were talking about Drew Aller, I think he himself, Drew Aller, got a bit conservative and would shut down a little bit too quick instead of, you know, taking his chances. So
not playing free.
There's no doubt in my mind that Franklin wants it. We shall see if we get it more often with Andy Kotelnicki. All right, let's go to Mike in Blacksburg. He's addressing this question to me. He says, Jim, I listened to your conversation with Chris Buchanani regarding the whiteout being against the best opponent or being in a night game. And both Chris and I felt like it should be a night game, always the whiteout. But Mike says, shouldn't the whiteout be used as a weapon against your best opponent?
Well, in an ideal world, so right, like if you're living in the idyllic fantasy land, it would be against your best opponent at night, right? But we don't live in a perfect world. So if you had your choice, would it be against the best opponent or would it be a night game, right? You want to marry the two together, but you can't always do that because it's not a perfect world. So which one are you choosing? You said you like the night game.
Yes.
I kind of like the night game as well because I just think it's so freaking cool, right? Like, as a college football fan, Penn State night game, I don't care if they're playing Purdue and it's a whiteout. I want to see that. I want to watch that. I need to see that theater. But I does it lose some of its zing when it's a day game, even if that would be the best opponent, Jimmy? I think it does a little bit, don't you?
I do. And here is, and I'm going to reiterate points that I made in that segment with Chris, which is two things. One is I think it needs to be a night game, but in this year, Ohio State, it's going to be a noon game.
Correct.
On Fox. The fact is the fans are going to be hyped and ready for that game anyway. Okay. Right.
They don't need a whiteout.
They don't need a whiteout to get pumped up for Ohio State. The fact that it's at noon. My second point, though, Andy, is this. The Big Ten Conference should mandate that the biggest game of the year for Penn State at home needs to be a night game. All right? And I'll keep bringing this up. I'm beating a dead horse here, Andy, but the Big Ten has managed for 1,000 years in a row to play Ohio State, Michigan at noon, no matter what, on the last week of the season. They will humor those two teams, those two programs, no matter what, okay? No matter what.
Yeah.
It's about time they acquiesced on something as important as the whiteout, all right? It's about time the league stepped in and said, you know what, Ohio State, don't care what you think. Don't care. Whiteout game is going to be at night in Happy Valley. That's the end of the discussion. So that's what needs to happen, Andy. All right, let's go next to...
You're wrong, but you're right as the Penn State fan, but overall you're wrong because you can't feed one beast.
We managed to feed the Michigan and Ohio State beast no matter what, Andy.
That's
no
two.
Matter what.
That's two, and they've been longer. They've been
Don't
around
care.
Longer.
Don't care.
All right,
it's
now
a whole
fighting.
Conference. It shouldn't be all about those two teams.
Do we need all a right, marriage Andy. Counselor? Do we need to call in a marriage counselor? Because we're fighting now. I'm just having fun. Go ahead. Let's get to the next one.
Andy, it should not be a fight. I'm right. You're wrong. It's very simple, okay? And if you don't like it, there's the door. Leave the house. You want a divorce? We'll get a divorce, yep. Andy. Okay? Yep. All right. Walt from D.C. wants to bring sanity back here. He says, Andy, how do you rank James Franklin among his peers in the Big Ten?
Ooh. Now? Right now?
Yes, right now.
Oh, man. So Harbaugh's gone. He would have been behind Jim Harbaugh. Ryan Day wins more and has actually, for the lack of success that Ohio State's had at a certain level, and they can't beat Michigan right now, they have actually won probably more what you would quantify as big games. So as much as it hurts me to say it, I think you have to put them behind Ryan Day. I put him above Kirk Ferentz because I think Iowa and Kirk Ferentz are about to discover what the not having the Big Ten West as a cover to make your season look better than it actually is really looks like. I think, yeah,
it's got to be two, right, Jimmy? I'm going by analysis by pro. I mean,
Lincoln Riley, Dan Henning.
No. Lincoln Riley's probably fourth on my Big Ten list. Probably behind Kirk Ferentz, as much as I'm not a Kirk Ferentz fan, but
Luke Fickell, Matt Rhule.
Yeah, like them. They're second years at their university and they're doing rehab projects. Penn State is not in rehab project mode. They can't get to the next level, but those teams are looking to get where Penn State is to see if they can have an opportunity to get to the next level. They're still in full rehab modes.
I'm gonna give you two names, Andy, and I think when judging coaches, you have to do a curve for, you know, Ryan Day started at third base. So how do you, you know, judge right. that? Right. But two names that I think because of the programs they're at and have had some success, and it's relative to their programs. PJ Fleck at Minnesota.
Love it.
And Greg Schiano at Rutgers.
Amen. You're on it, brother.
I think those are, you know, two programs that those coaches are doing a lot with a little. Yeah. PJ Fleck, he does have some stuff there, but it's still Minnesota.
Yeah.
You know, not the loaded with recruits in Minnesota.
Right.
That's a tough place to recruit. And he's won games there. I think he's one of those guys that when they get rid of him, they'll regret it. Yeah, okay.
I do hate the row the boat thing, but I get it. Yeah. No, he is. You're 100% right. We can get rid of our marriage counselor. We're back on. We're good, Jimmy.
and Greg Schiano, I will say the same thing. Rutgers, what a tough job. And he had to also playing in the Big Ten East, which meant every season – he starts with losses to Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. I mean, he starts the season 0-3.
Correct.
And, you know, so how do you judge these guys? It's interesting. Schiano was on the coaching staff at Ohio State.
He was.
So that is the question, switch jobs there. How would Schiano do at Ohio State? How would Ryan Day do at Rutgers?
Oh, man. So – if he didn't have to start at third base, great analogy, and he had to start at home plate, I think Ryan Day would be a good singles hitter, right? Like he would be a good singles hitter for Rutgers. I think you give Greg Schiano third base at Ohio State. I think that's advantage Greg Schiano, to be honest with you. Because he's hitting doubles if you want to do the baseball stuff, he's hitting doubles at Rutgers. Jimmy, I mean, that's pretty clear. And I think at that level, Ryan Day, probably a singles hitter.
Now, I haven't looked at Rutgers' schedule for this year, but they've got to be out from under having to play all of Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State. I'm looking to see them do even better. They seem to have been improving every year. All right, that's it for Ask Andy. Stick around, more to go in quarter number four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy Shea. I'm Jim Galante. We are talking Penn State football. So far, we've had a fun and interesting show. Andy and I broke up on quarter number two. We kissed and made up in quarter number three. We'll see how quarter number four goes, Andy. let me tell you where I'm headed with this segment. I've mentioned this before, especially during the off season. I love to see some of these articles from national places where they talk college football, see what their thoughts are on Penn State, see what their overall thoughts are. And there was a national article that talked about the recruiting efforts in the Big Ten. And they actually went through and gave a blurb on every single team. Well, Andy, I don't care about every single team. I care about Penn State and a handful of other teams. So okay. Let's hit those. I want to read to you, and this was from folks who listen to the show know I subscribe to The Athletic. I think they have some wonderful stuff, wonderful college football stuff. He talks about this is Penn State's class of 25. That would be right. The upcoming recruiting class. Nationally ranked ninth, number of commitments 13, average player rating 89, which by the way would rank them 19th in the individual ranking of players, but they're up right. To number nine because they have 13 commitments, which is a good number. And right. Here's the comment. The Nittany Lions, they're in the top 10, but can they stay there? Franklin has signed only two top 10 classes in his decade at Penn State. This program always produces a solid amount of talent, but can't get over the hump against Ohio State and Michigan. Duh. Nittany Lions need to reach another level. The 25 class is good, but the average player rating is only 19th. This isn't the end of the recruiting cycle. A lot going on. In fact, a lot going right on right now, the month of June. Andy, this is talking about this year's class, but it's also this. Just put it on repeat. This is typical of a James Franklin recruiting class. Good, but not great. And the end results then are good, but not great.
So I think this class will obviously need some bling. That's it. It's solid in its bones. It just needs some high-end wax, right? Like a little wax on. But, I mean, yeah, I don't think Penn State is in a recruiting position with under James Franklin to think that they're anything other than, you know, a top 10 class maybe once or twice out of every 5 years. And I think they've been producing and sending talent to the NFL. I just don't think they've been able to make it. They've been more cohesive at doing that than they have been at being cohesive as a team in big games. I don't think this is a recruiting thing to a degree. I think he's recruiting exactly what he likes, wants, and needs. I think he's getting it. I just don't think he's been able to figure out the other side of the puzzle. And that is they have, you know, they're sending individual talent to the league. So they're getting it and developing it at a certain level. They're developing a crap load of it.
There's a lot of good talent development that goes on Penn State, but what is absent is that cohesion in those next level games to be competitive and actually get across that line off between their offense and defense. Either one or somehow the other seems to look down. Look at the Ohio State games when under Barkley and McSorley, they would get in the 30s, mid to upper 30s in points, and then the defense would melt away, right? Now, more recently, the defense has been able to keep Ohio State in check, and the offense can't walk across the street, per se, right? So those gaps, and they keep showing up in different ways. That is how Penn State's recruiting is manifesting itself on the field. But at its core, I mean, this class is a perfect reflection of what James, he's going to land a couple of those top 100 players that he'll need. He'll find the ones that he wants and gets. And this class might stay in the top 10, might not. But he never falls to 40, Jimmy. That's the thing. He doesn't fall to 29 or 42. He stays right in this sort of like 7 to, 21 lane. That's where James sort of puts it. And I don't think it's a recruiting problem at all, Jimmy. I really don't.
I'm not going to label it necessarily a problem, Andy, but it's a consistent issue. He just typically, he's hit one or two top 10 classes, but it's mostly 12 or 13, something like that.
Yeah, that's...
The problem is your primary competition is Ohio State, which is always at the top, 1, 2, or 3. And just a real quick on Ohio State, their national rank is number 2 with the number of commitments 13, and their average player rating is actually the highest in the country.
Yep.
They're only ranked 2nd because they don't have as many recruits so far.
Yeah,
so,
they have the best class in the country right now.
But
that's not even an argument.
Yes. Every year, Andy, they are at that elite level. And I think where you see it most, or I can demonstrate it, is let's talk about the quarterback position, where Ohio State regularly has 2, 3, 4 quarterbacks who were top 100 recruits, okay, Andy? Until Drew Aller, what was the highest ranking as a player that a Penn State quarterback had under James Franklin?
Probably would it be if there was one in the top 150, I'd be surprised.
You're correct. The highest rank was Sean Clifford, who was number 200.
Yeah, okay? I didn't think he was a top 150. I knew he was a top 300, but I didn't think he was a top 150.
And Ohio State, and the name escapes me right now, there's Kyle McCord, who was their starting quarterback last year. He was a top 100 quarterback.
Right.
Had his opportunity, and he's gone. He didn't meet their standard. You know what? Doesn't matter, Andy. Doesn't matter. Because they have 3 or 4 more coming behind. Penn State doesn't have that margin of error. And I'm just using quarterback, but it's the case throughout the recruiting class. Now, how do you want to say this? Do you want to say, hey, James Franklin's just plain not recruiting well enough? Or is that just the way it's going to be? For example, if you were to compare Penn State recruiting to Maryland, now, Maryland literally exists in the DMV, okay?
Right.
But Penn State goes down there and just pulls the kids out of there because if a kid has a choice between Maryland and Penn State, they're going to go to Penn State. I don't care what that coach does at Maryland. Is it the same thing, the analogy? Maryland is to Penn State as Penn State is to Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia, where those three teams are just that head and shoulders above with recruiting, which means they have more talent every year, Andy.
Penn State, the Penn State problem, okay, it's painful for me to say this, KSN fans. Jimmy's right. It's the quarterback position. For every 15 top 100 quarterbacks that come through Ohio State in, say, a 3 to 5 year window, right? Like they get a crap load of them. Penn State might get 1. So it's a 1 to 15 ratio. That it's not like that at on other positions, and in the more modern recruiting, like now, not only does Ohio State already have pedigree in the way they recruit, they now have resources in the pedigree they recruit. They have a war chest, an NIL war chest like few others, like maybe like nobody else. So is it a surprise at all with the combination of those two, particularly the NIL war chest, that they're going to have the best recruiting class in the country? No, but at the next level, what does Ohio State have to show for all this recruiting class? They couldn't beat Michigan. They haven't won a Big Ten title in 4 years, and they're 0-2 in their last college football playoff two playoff appearances. I know they almost beat Georgia. If that kick goes through, we're talking different. But they don't. They have as few results, measurable results. There's not much difference between Penn State and Ohio State on the football field by the standards of what they recruit and where they start.
But, Andy, Ryan Day is catching heat right now for exactly what you laid out there. Penn State would kill for being in the position Ohio State is, making, you know, when it's a four-team college playoff. So, you know, with the recruiting, Michigan does not recruit like Ohio State does either, okay?
They recruit like Penn State recruits.
But they were able to put something together. And there are teams, you know, Washington, we saw what they did last year. Now, Oregon seems to be another a juggernaut now, or becoming one in recruiting and absolutely with the portal.
Landing's
in large part because of NIL.
Yeah,
so I guess my question, Andy, is this. You know, James Franklin catches a lot of heat for his record against Ohio State and now Michigan also. But is it fair when you consider, you know, where that starting point is? As we point out, Ryan Day started, and Ohio State, they're starting at third base.
Right. When I think about it, right, like who recruits closer – Penn State and Michigan, when under Harbaugh, they recruit almost identical, right? It's very similar. Like, they always kind of end up as neighbors in the recruiting rankings, right? Like, they're recruiting ranking neighbors. And you can argue when Jim Harbaugh finally got Michigan over the hump into the next level, when, you know, with that Aiden Hutchinson group, they had a defense, right? But they didn't have the offense, and the disconnect was on the other side of the ball. And they work through that at the next level and married the two together. That's what Harbaugh brought to the table and was able to do. And it's the gap that James Franklin can't close, because Harbaugh's a really good, really, really, really good football coach. And he was able to figure out that to close that gap between one side of the ball and the other, you can't do that if you're going to win a national championship. That Michigan team could beat you three different ways on either side of the ball last year. It was their choice, or it was how the game unfolded in front of them. They were like a chameleon. They could do it on either side of the ball several different ways. Penn State can't do that. That is the gap that I'm talking about. But those two are recruiting neighbors, and one coach figured out how to do that. Ryan Day starting at third base means Ryan Day has a higher standard. Can't meet it.
All right, Andy, that's the last word. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.